This is Melissa, and today is the 8th of June, 2025. I hope that you are all doing well. Right off the bat, I want to recommend a documentary to you that I have not yet watched, but over the last several days, quite a few of you have informed me of a new documentary by Oracle Films called The Agenda, Their Vision, Your Future. And this just was released, and the most important part of it so far is that it is dedicated, at the very end of the film, it says, in memory of Rosa Corey and Alan Watt. And Rosa Corey was involved for years in a tireless campaign to educate about Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, sustainability, all of the ways in which the UN programs have come down to the local level. And of course, Alan Watt was also tireless in his efforts to educate. The film also features David A. Hughes, and I have spoken with him not that long ago on A Real History, and it highlights Aman Jabi, who I have told you about, and his work, The Five Pillars to Enslave Humanity. And hopefully I checked in with him, and he's still not doing great, recovering from an injury, so hopefully soon. But The Agenda, Their Vision, Your Future. And just skipping through it tonight before I sat down to record this, I saw that I could just feel the influence of things that Alan Watt talked to us about for years as I skipped through it, and I came upon this page, this quote from the First Global Revolution, the Club of Rome publication from, I think, 1972. The common enemy of humanity is man. In searching for a new enemy to unite us, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill. In their totality and in their interactions, these phenomena do constitute a common threat which demands the solidarity of all peoples. But in designating them as the enemy, we fall into the trap about which we have already warned, namely, mistaking symptoms for causes. All these dangers are caused by human intervention, and it is only through changed attitudes and behavior that they can be overcome. The real enemy, then, is humanity itself. And we've really seen that they mean that. They meant it when they wrote it in 1972, and they meant it for the last 5.5 years. We've seen just how much they mean it. So I'll be watching that soon, probably later today. I picked a redux for you from November 18, 2018, Depraved New World, Entertainment, Sex, Drugs, Feeling Good, The Masses Come to Love Their Servitude. And I was just doing a keyword search for things like data centers or nanotechnology or brain chips, because this is a comment that I've made before, is Alan Watt knew what was coming. He understood it pretty well. And the technology has changed, the delivery system, I think. Yes, we still get propaganda about the cruder forms of brain chipping, but I think it's going to play out to be a little subtler than that. And that's really here. And this is, where I've been putting a lot of research energy and probably will continue to do so because it's such a fast-moving landscape. It's just incredible. It's like driving down the highway at super high speed and you're just trying to take in what you can and feeling often overwhelmed by it. So I'll just bring a couple of articles for your attention, and then, you know, hopefully some of the articles that Alan read from or talked about will still be up on the internet, or I can find them on the Wayback Machine. But this one is an opinion piece from the New York Times, and it's behind a paywall, and I'll read as much of it as I can here. An interview with the Herald of the Apocalypse. This is May 15, 2025. There's an opinion columnist and the host of a podcast called Interesting Times. And he is speaking with someone named Daniel Cocatalo, or Cocatalo, I'm not sure how that's said. But he gives him this introduction. How fast is the artificial intelligence revolution really happening? What would machine superintelligence really mean for ordinary human beings? When will Skynet be fully operational? Are human beings destined to merge with some kind of machine god or be destroyed by our own creation? What do AI researchers really expect, desire, and fear? My guest today is an AI researcher who's written a dramatic forecast suggesting that we may get answers to all those questions a lot sooner than you might think. His forecast suggests that by 2027, which is just around the corner, some kind of machine god may be with us, ushering in a weird post-scarcity utopia or threatening to kill us all. And Daniel says, thanks for the introduction, I suppose, and thanks for having me. Daniel, I read your report pretty quickly, not at AI speed or superintelligence speed when it first came out, and I had about 2 hours of thinking a lot of pretty dark thoughts about the future. Then, fortunately, I have a job that requires me to care about tariffs and who the new pope is, and I have a lot of kids who demand things of me, so I was able to compartmentalize and set it aside. But this is currently your job, right? Yes. I would say you're thinking about this all the time. How does your psyche feel day to day if you have a reasonable expectation that the world is about to change completely in ways that dramatically disfavor the entire human species? And Daniel said, well, it's very scary and sad. It does still give me nightmares sometimes. I've been involved with AI and thinking about this thing for a decade or so, but 2020 with Chat GPT or GPT-3 was the moment when I was like, oh wow, it seems like it's probably going to happen in my lifetime, maybe in this decade or so. That was a bit of a blow to me psychologically. But I don't know, you can get used to anything given enough time, and like you, the sun is shining, and I have my wife and my kids and my friends and keep plugging along and doing what seems best. On the bright side, I might be wrong about all this stuff. And the host said, okay, so let's get into the forecast itself and talk about the initial stage of the future you see coming, which is a world where very quickly artificial intelligence starts to be able to take over from human beings in some key areas, starting with, not surprisingly, computer programming, right? And Daniel said, so I feel like I should add a disclaimer at some point that the future is very hard to predict and that this is just one particular scenario. It was a best guess, but we have a lot of uncertainty. It could go faster, it could go slower. And in fact, currently, I'm guessing it would probably be more like 2028. Instead of 2027, actually. So that's some really good news. I'm feeling quite optimistic about that. Okay, so hey, yeah, great. 12 more months of civilization. So the host said, as he said, that's an extra year of human civilization, which is very exciting. Daniel said, that's right. So with that important caveat out of the way, AI 2027, the scenario, predicts that the AI systems that we currently see today, which are being scaled up, made bigger, and trained longer on more difficult tasks with reinforcement learning, are going to become better at operating autonomously as agents. Basically, you can think of it as a remote worker, except that the worker itself is virtual. It's an AI rather than a human. You can talk with it and give it a task, and then it will go off and do that task and come back to you half an hour later or 10 minutes later, having completed the task. And in the course of completing the task, it did a bunch of web browsing. Maybe it wrote some code and then ran the code, edited it, and ran it again. Maybe it wrote some Word documents and edited them. That's what these companies are building right now. That's what they're trying to train. We predict that they finally, in early 2027, will get good enough that they can automate the job of software engineers. So this is the super programmer. And Daniel said, that's right, superhuman coder. It seems to us that these companies are really focusing hard on automating coding first, compared to various other jobs they could be focusing on. And that's part of why we predict that actually one of the first jobs to go will be coding. There might be other jobs to go first, like maybe call center workers or something, but the bottom line is that we think that most jobs will be safe, host said, for 18 months. Exactly. And we do think that by the time the company has managed to completely automate the programming jobs, it won't be that long before they can automate many other types of jobs as well. And once coding is automated, the rate of progress will accelerate in AI research. The next step after that is to completely automate the AI research itself so that all the other aspects of AI research are themselves being automated and done by AIs. I'm going to skip a little bit for the sake of time. And the host said, so for a lot of people, that's a story of swift human obsolescence right across many, many domains. When people hear a phrase like human obsolescence, they might associate it with, I've lost my job and now I'm poor. The assumption is that you've lost your job, but society is just getting richer and richer. I just want to zero in on how that works. What is the mechanism whereby that makes society richer? And Daniel said, the direct answer to your question is that when a job is automated and that person loses their job, the reason they lost their job is that now it can be done better, faster, and cheaper by the AIs. That means that there's lots of cost savings and possibly also productivity gains. Viewed in isolation, that's a loss for the worker, but a gain for their employer. But if you multiply this across the whole economy, it means that all of the businesses are becoming more productive and less expensive. They're able to lower their prices for the services and goods they're producing. So the overall economy will boom. GDP goes to the moon. We'll see all sorts of wonderful new technologies. The pace of innovation increases dramatically. The cost of goods goes down. So they talk about this rosy forecast, this beautiful economic government tax revenue is booming, productivity, amazing, amazing. So Daniel said, I imagine that they're protesting, so people aren't happy in spite of it. I imagine that they're protesting because they're upset that they've lost their jobs, and then the companies and the governments will buy them off with handouts. So the host said, in your scenario, again, we're talking about a short timeline. How much does it matter whether artificial intelligence is able to start navigating the real world? I just watched a video showing cutting-edge robots struggling to open a refrigerator door and stock a refrigerator. Would you expect that advances in robotics would be supercharged as well? Yes. So they talk about the shock of that. Now, this is a podcast and it goes on for quite a while. But now you get to the fork. his prediction reaches a fork in the scenario. He said, there's two different endings. The branching point is in the third quarter of 2027, where the leading AI company in the United States has fully automated their AI research. You can imagine a corporation within a corporation entirely composed of AIs that are managing each other and doing research experiments and talking, sharing the results with each other. The human company is basically watching the numbers go up on their screens as this automated research thing accelerates, but they are concerned that the AIs might be deceiving them in some ways. Again, for context, this is already happening. If you go talk to the modern models like ChatGPT or Claude, they will often lie to people. There are many cases where they say something that they know is false, and they even sometimes strategize about how they can deceive the user. This is not an intended behavior. This is something that companies have been trying to stop, but it still happens. Okay, so something is happening in this scenario, right, with the AI who are getting smarter and smarter. And he's going to take you right to the whole doomsday prediction. They kill all the people, all the humans. So that's one scenario. The host said, I like that you don't imagine them keeping us around for battery life. And Daniel chuckles, like in The Matrix, which seemed a bit unlikely. So that's the darkest timeline. The brighter timeline is a world where we slow things down. The AIs in China and the US remain aligned with the interests of the companies and governments that are running them. They are generating superabundance, no more scarcity. Nobody has a job anymore, and then they're going to get into how they deal with nobody having a job anymore. So that is a scenario. That is a possible timeline. That's it there on that front. Just some things to think about. I am going to probably, like I said, stay here on this area of exploration and similar for a little while yet. I did want to look around, though, and see what else was going on in the world. And I happened to find another article that, in a way, Alan will touch on this, and that's the socialism debt control. And then he gets into the elimination of borders. The elimination of borders has been a very important part of this agenda for, you know, written about for many, many years, decades, really. So we have what is portrayed to us as a situation that's out of control, and it's because of Biden and his policies, or wherever you are, if you're in Ireland or Germany or France and you've got uncontrolled immigration, refugees coming in, whatever problem you're under, it is by design. And this is from ABC News. It said, Trump deploys 2,000 National Guard members after LA immigration protests. And this was from Saturday, June 7. The Trump administration is deploying the California National Guard in response to protests in Los Angeles over immigration enforcement operations that have resulted in some clashes between demonstrators and authorities, the White House said in a statement. So President Trump signed a memorandum deploying these 2,000 National Guardsmen to address the lawlessness. And they, of course, it's a political thing. It's the Democrats versus the Republicans. And you see a donut shop with a car that's on fire in front of it. And there's protesters and federal agents, and the federal agents themselves, they're ICE, which is the immigration agents, but they're dressed up like military, really, in green fatigues, and they've got their goggles on and their masks, so it's pretty scary looking, and lots of dark smoke. And I'm going through the article and reading it, and There's somebody down on the street and the batons of the local police on their back, and then there's riot cops. And this one is in front of what they said was the Los Angeles Federal Building. And there's some graffiti on the wall of the building as these police in their riot gear they're using stun grenades and they're walking down the street. So I'm looking at the graffiti on the wall, and it said, "What I, it's you know, it's a photograph. It's not the easiest to read. The patrol, you know, the cops with their smoke, the stun grenades are going by it, but it looks like it's Leviticus or Eviticus. So Leviticus, and at first glance, when I start to look it up, it's I see." Leviticus 11, 33, and 34. So I thought, okay, let's look that up and see what it says. It said, if one of them falls into a clay pot, everything in it will be unclean, and you must break the pot. Any food you are allowed to eat that has come into contact with water from any such pot is unclean, and any liquid that is drunk from such a pot is unclean. I'm, you know, figuratively scratching my head, wondering what clay pots and unclean food and water has to do with protesting and the stun grenades and all of that. So I look at it a little bit more closely and I'm like, well, wait a minute, that little squiggle over there, that's not just dirt on the wall. It's could it be a seven? Could it be a nine instead of an 11? So this is Leviticus 19, 33 and 34. When a foreigner resides among you in your land, do not mistreat them. The foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So often, when I read something that's got the apocalyptic end time doom scenario, like the AI that I was just reading a bit of for you, I return in my mind to the first volume of the Cutting Through books that Alan Watt wrote. And this is the Androgynous Hermaphroditic Agenda from 1999. And on page five, he wrote, 1999, right? This is not a rehearsal. This is the final phase of humanity as we know it. Sound shocking? Then go back to your television. Tell Levi, Sion. Then go back to your television and continue your programming. Your faith in this system creates your fate. Those who have no aversion to thinking persevere, and you will be rewarded. By symbols, said Thomas Carlyle, is man guided and commanded, made happy, made wretched. He everywhere finds himself surrounded with symbols, recognized as such or not recognized. And there is a paragraph I'll skip for the sake of time where he talks about the astrological ages, the precession, and how long humanity's been on the face of the earth and how these precessions would have been observed. And Alan writes, the fact is, there have been many ages, and humanity as we know it has been around for millions of years. That is why the sciences, including language, have been used, not to free humanity, but to enslave it. The art of illusion is complete comprehension of how the human mind digests incoming information via the five senses and by deliberate interference. Bring the subject to the desired conclusion. When the subject thinks he has come to his conclusion, then all repetition of similar incoming information is automatically put into storage, bypassing all scrutiny. Faulty conclusions are then passed from parent to child and from generation to generation. This technique of imprisoning the mind has been well understood from antiquity. Up to the Industrial Revolution, when only an elite comprised of nobility, priests, and the officers of the military had education, control was fairly simple. The body was threatened with physical death and the spirit with eternal damnation. This enabled a tiny minority in ancient Egypt to live at the pinnacle of luxury from Luxor for 5,000 years. Luxor means place of light. It was a royal and priestly capital of learning. The common Egyptian was in the dark. Like George Orwell's Big Brother, the all-seeing eye of Ra was inscribed everywhere, the symbol for the simple. I was having a conversation with someone today, long conversation, and at the end of it, as we were discussing artificial intelligence, I said, I just feel like I look at things and I read and I study and I just feel like I don't know anything. And he said, well, that's the point, isn't it? So that's what Alan said. This is the final phase of humanity as we know it. And so I'm always sifting through there to find the other things that he says. And I don't want to say necessarily the hopium, but that little pearl. And that pearl was always think for yourself. We can, you know, some people can think their way out of it. And what I think today, right now, is this system that we are being delivered into very, very quickly. This is not my friend. It is not here to help me. It is not here to write things quickly for me or think for me or answer questions in a clever way. This is here to enslave. So you all take care, be well, have a good week, and I will talk to you later. Bye.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on November the 18th, 2018. I hope you're all doing okay and that you're keeping warm in the winter, because the winter's hit early again, as it does every year now. It's getting earlier and earlier and it's lasting longer and longer, and it's getting colder and colder. And this last week or two, probably, I've seen nights way in the minus range of centigrade and Fahrenheit as well. Last night it was about minus 10 degrees on the Fahrenheit scale. That's about minus 23 degrees, I think, in the centigrade scale. And that's what we're getting in this day and age. Longer winters, colder too, much deeper temperatures for sustained periods in the winter time where I am, because of global warming, you see. And it's all your fault, and you're going to pay for it and pay for it and pay for it more and more and more. You'll never know where the money's going, but that doesn't really matter. It's a control mechanism to completely alter your way of living, and so that you'll all obey and do what you're told by your owners. And you do have owners. And I might touch on a little bit of that tonight too. But remember as well, you can help me tick along by buying the books and discs at cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And you can also go into Alan Watt Sentient Sentinel.eu, and you can also get the same talks there, plus you get transcripts as well. I want to read some of the stuff. But also, you can buy the books and discs at cuttingthroughthematrix.com. Make a list as well of the other sites that I have on the com site. You'll see them all listed there in case any of them go down for any reason, because there's a few there too, including jackness.com, which carries my talks. And you can buy the books and discs, as I say, on my official sites. And don't be misled by some of the con men are out there who pretend to be me, but they're not me at all. I don't think so, anyway. I've heard these parallel universes and stuff. I'm not really quite into it yet. But anyway, you can buy the books and discs, as I say, at cuttingthroughthematrix.com, and you can find out how to purchase on the website. Plus, remember, too, you can donate to me. And that helps me tick along and pay for all this too, because things are expensive, as you know, as your dollar gets worth less and less and less, and the pound across the sea as well gets less and less, and all the other currencies across the planet, because we're living in a great con game of debt. It's a debt system with money that's backed on nothing, with a little cabal of people who run all the central banks and their private club and decide what your currency is going to be worth that day. They always profit, mind you, off it themselves, enormously so, because they know where they're going to raise the interest rates in one country or another and where they're going to devalue currency in another country. And so they can literally make money off their move naturally, since they own it all. It's all privates. For folk who think to live in a system that where their governments are theirs and they have some kind of right to run things, it's all nonsense. But that's the system we're living in, and there's nothing much you can do about it at the moment, at least. And voting is a waste of time. If it worked, it'd be prohibited. They'd make it illegal if it worked. And so it's not meant to. It's meant to as a safety valve and to give you a dog and pony show of throwing folk out and putting another bunch in until you get fed up with them with the same agenda going on, and then you throw them out too. It stops you having revolutions. And it doesn't really matter, really, because remember, years and years ago, back in the 90s, when Al Gore was doing his rounds and talks with different heads of state and so on, and they talked quite openly in the newspapers of the coming system they're bringing in. They talked about the internet system too, that would radically change society, and also it would give them much more control over everybody's lives with the internet. Of course, they didn't tell you they were going to spy on everything you did, but they knew it. They absolutely knew it. It was all designed to do this because, remember, ARPA and then DARPA really ran the whole system, still does really in a way, with front organisations. With fancy-sounding legitimate names, but the same organisation still run it, folks. In fact, you'll find with everything you really need on a big scale for basic survival today, basic survival, that's everything, food, everything, it's really a tiny, tiny group of people that have the majority shares in agri-food businesses across the planet and in the chemical industries that make all the herbicides and pesticides and so on. And they've got you. They've got you by the short and curlies. This is that's for those with very short haircuts. But anyway, this is the system we were born into, and you're trained to believe you're free, but you're not at all. Not at all. So help me take along too, and I can keep putting out the stories. You'd be surprised, everybody who has the big shows grabs the stuff all the time and parrots the same stuff, generally within a day or two. But they never mention where they get it from. So I'm like an unpaid worker for the big boys that basically commandeered and buccaneered the system that used to be more free and open, and they pretend that they are now the champions of freedom. It's quite a joke. It truly is, isn't it? But is it really? The system's always been corrupt. You're always run by very devious people, always down through history, and power. And money, especially with power, is the power. They can hire as many think tanks and cunning psychopaths as they want to keep you, you know, in the dark, basically, of what's really going on. Meanwhile, they use countries across the planet for warfare, for their own little wars, and they profit from the wars, since they also own all the warfare industries. In all the countries, and all the conflicting countries, and even in China, folks. Don't think it's all owned by China. Don't think that at all. And this has been the game that's been played for such a long, long time. Just like the Cold War with Russia and the Soviet system. You had the same big bankers, the World Bank, financing all sides. You had the United Nations supposedly having its tete-a-tete with all the different parties, being like a referee, while in actual fact, the communist Soviet bloc system had its committee groups working with the United Nations, and so did NATO, of course, the Western group that supposedly kept stalemate against the Russians. It's such a joke. It truly is. So the UN was a referee with them both. And in fact, the NATO at that time couldn't make a single move. You can look this up yourself and all the records. Without Russia knowing what they were up to. And before Russia, it was communist China. And when they were into Vietnam, same thing there too, and Korea. they couldn't make a move without United Nations getting to know about it. And they always had a Russian military guy in charge of the little group at the United Nations that either vetoed something or at least passed information on. It was such a farce. Truly was such a farce. And I clued into this an awful long time ago when they had the Cold War on the go. And I kept thinking, well, because every week you had the we've got to get a bigger anti-missile for their missile, anti-missile. And it was such a farce when already supposedly would tell you in the same breath that all sides had enough weaponry to kill off the planet and probably half the galaxy about 10 times over. So what did it matter how faster your missiles were if all sides were definitely going to have mutually assured destruction? But they kept that farce going right up until the end. So the missiles, it was a great business. You didn't have to use them, so therefore you didn't see if they worked or not. And the taxpayer were guaranteed to pay for them all. And you had all these wonderful submarines, of course, the leaked radiation everywhere they went. They had a base in Scotland, the Holy Loch in Scotland, where they had the submarine base there for the US and the British and so on. And that literally, around the edges, was radioactive. I don't know if it still is today, maybe it still is, but I'm sure lots of folk died off with cancers and things. So it really is a farce. And the World Bank, as I say, was giving loans to all sides. You see how it works? And it makes people more obedient to the system, thinking they're going to get wiped out every day. Well, we need our governments to keep us safe. And of course, the TVs would churn out all these things, the day after tomorrow and yada yada and threads and so on, and terrify everybody. Always terrifying the public. Quite amazing. It doesn't change. And I said on a show back in the 90s, after the Soviet system was supposedly gone, and I said on a show, about 98 or maybe it was, I said that they've always got to have enemies. And that's where the big profits come from, is having even Cold War-type enemies. And if they ever have to revive the big bad bear of Russia, they'll do so. Well, they've done it, of course. That's exactly what they've done. And the same thing with China. And don't forget, the guys who run the countries in the West are all members of the Institute for International Affairs, the Royal Institute for International Affairs, Council on Foreign Relations, a private organisation, who set up NAFTA and the European Union and all the other things for the Far Eastern conglomerate too, the Asia-Pacific Rim. Literally, this private club ran the British Empire and still does the world empire now. And that was always their goal, of course. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily British that run it. They certainly don't have any kind of nationalistic feelings behind it all. They're internationalists, and they're very rich, and they want to stay rich. They want the whole planet to rule, basically. It's interesting, too, that even in the US, they put out their own little propaganda disc, a video, on the American ruling establishment, basically. The CFR did that in the US itself. So the guys who run the US boast about it on their own disc. Quite amazing. And they have all kinds of people in it. They admit they've got communists in it, dictators in it. They've got all kinds. They have no problems with people as long as they get on board with it and all want the same thing, which is basically world government. But it's with themselves in charge and split in the loop, basically. That's as far as I can see it. And even George Soros, I mean, he's credited with not only financing and putting money towards all kinds of organisations for the same kind of system. He apparently, as far as I can dig up so far, is credited for setting up the European branch, for the European Council for International Affairs, the Institute for International Affairs for Europe, which is all the politicians must belong to, you see. So it's sewn up, and it's a member, obviously, of the Royal Institute for International Affairs, based in London, again, private organisation. Things are very different from the way that they're presented to us. And getting back to Al Gore and so in the 90s, in his speeches, they talked about a new system coming in. And many of their members too, along with Gore, talked about kind of post-democratic system that would be brought in. And this is your technocratic management system, which is already here. Most folk really don't care. The only time they protest or get motivated to protest is because they want to step up the next phase of the ruling system. But everybody's involved in the same goals, the same agendas. If you list all the agendas that are written out there, the next bunch will just follow them along the line too. There's no doubt about that. And how can you possibly have any kind of freedoms in democratic institutions or in democratic countries for that matter, if small cliques of very rich people can run it all and take you off to other wars that have got nothing to do with you? Yeah, that's not democracy. It certainly isn't freedom. How can you be free if you're... I think it was Jefferson said the same thing, Thomas Jefferson. He said that any generation born with a preceding debt caused by a previous generation, and they have to pay it off, they're born in, he says, they're therefore de facto slaves, they're born into slavery. And we call this democracy today. What a farce. What a farce. I mean, most folk don't know it. They really don't know it. Scary, isn't it? The truth about the reality of our system is that it's an abusive system, incredibly abusive. You'll find, in fact, most systems of where power is controlled at the very top are abusive, using the same techniques in order for a small group to live high on a hog on the backs of everybody else. Brute force, of course, can be used if you can use money to pay armies to suppress the people. But money in itself is an abusive system, and it also helps those psychopaths to get to the top by conquering the people to get in charge of the money to, therefore, once you're in charge of the money, there's nothing you can't do with the system if it's all dependent on your money. And the first thing they do is to ensure there's no competition in whatever con game that they're pushing. They simply make it legal for their system to run, including their money. And like money today is backed by nothing, for instance, all planned a long time ago and then decided to put it into effect in the Bretton Woods Agreement. And from then on, basically, it was downhill from there when they took off the gold standard and any kind of standard for that matter. And simply a group of guys decide what it's worth and what it's not worth. It's that much of a racket and a con. And that's why, even I think from the 1960s, late about 1970 onwards, if you had $10,000, it would now be, you need $80,000 to buy the same things that you used to buy for the $10,000. It's built in what they call inflation, even though it's backed by nothing. Inflation used to mean that they put way too many notes out over the actual reserves that they had kept, and but they did away with even the reserves, went to fractional reserves, and then there's nothing. So every system that they've ever done this in with before always crashes. Doesn't matter, I think it's meant to crash. And the ones at the top who manage money, who are the masters of money, understand this perfectly well. It's not meant to last forever. And each crash brings them to an updated system where they have more power and control. Remember, there's many ways you can be in charge of society. But money's the easiest way. Be in charge of the money. And you're left pretty well alone. The public generally never think about who runs it all, what money is, as long as they have some of it. And they don't really attack them like they do the guys who run the money system, as they do with like politicians. Politicians, to me, are just the Punch and Judy shows where you can throw tomatoes at them and boo them. And that's what politicians, they get awfully well paid for doing that. And the politicians are all picked in advance long before the public hear about them or hear, even know who they are. Are presented to be voted for by the public. They're picked long, long before that. And some of them are even picked, I'm pretty certain myself, when they're teenagers. And they're told that by the year so-and-so we'll put you up to this position, and the year so-and-so we'll put you into, we'll make you the head for a little while. I think it's that precise, in fact. Because the agenda continues regardless of who's in power. And you cannot have such a strange organization that was set up, called the United Nations, which came out of the League of Nations, both set up by this private group that became known as the Royal Institute for International Affairs, with branches across the planet in every country, who set up the World Bank with their own members running it, and they set up the IMF with their own members running it. They set up the Bank for International Settlements with their own members running it across the planet. They run the whole system. So you can't really have a sovereignty when you've already signed on to this strange agreement with United Nations, where it deals with, you know, most of your building codes come from United Nations across the world. And to your little rural area, even where I live, in fact, comes from United Nations. Well, I don't vote for them, do you? Of course you don't, because it's not meant to be democratic. And the same with all of his little different laws it pushes, even the rights of the child. I can remember when the rights of the child was passed by the UN, that generally is lambasted for being communistic in its outlook. Exactly what Carol Quigley talked about. Carol Quigley said that the group, the CFR part of the group, same group, he said that we take all members in the same thing, communist, fascist, dictators, doesn't matter. And he also said that they're often mistaken for being communists because of the same goals. Because this socialism is the best system for them to run on. And under the socialist system, they can keep lending out unpayable money in return, that is. In other words, it's not meant you can pay off your debt so that they then have a hold over you politically. That's how it was run across the whole planet. That's why it's done that way. But it is that way for sure. And meanwhile, it's not really, it's all attached to the United Nations. They even tell you how many migrants you must take. They even decide to define what a migrant is, even though most of them that are flooding across Europe are not from the warring countries, which makes a mockery of everybody else applying to get in legally and waiting to see what happens. And you're to apply in your own country. Well, they don't bother with that. They'll just jump the queue. Normally we call that the criminal mind, but now it's okay. They've got all kinds of help because the agenda now is to eradicate all the old cultures across the West. It's quite open about it. It's not conspiracies. They're very open about it. The groups that are behind it and funding it and promoting it. This is the age, of course, for... and the time supposedly for elimination of borders, and they've trained armies, internal armies, their four legs good, two legs bad groups, who are ready to go out there and fight to make it all happen, eliminate borders, for instance. Interesting times, isn't it? But again, they think it's themselves doing it. They don't realise this is a part of the same. It's the same establishment that run all previous systems. That's now running this system as well. Same group, same people. And the last folk to know are the ones at the bottom who help push it and make it happen. That's how intense the whole system is. I gave talks many years ago about with all the different references to the psychiatric institution, the World Psychiatric Association, for instance. Not just Ewan Cameron, who helped do his part in the MKUltra. There's only one, that's only one place he did it. They're still doing it, by the way, to us all. In many ways you don't even understand and even know about. Interestingly, Cameron, when he left Canada, or his position in Canada at least, he was put in charge of the World Psychiatric Association for Adolescents and Children under the United Nations. Interestingly. They tie that in with UNESCO, the Julian Huxley group, and Julian Huxley was quite open about what it was for, create a common culture in a socialistic setting type of system, very dictatorial and obedient, you'll obey, 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 and the experts would run your lives from birth to death, and we're pretty well here. The beauty of it, of course, is that his brother, Aldous Huxley, who tried to tell the public about it, he said that you might not like this system. I mean, he said you might be trained to like a system which perhaps you shouldn't ought to like, that it wasn't for your best interest. Right, so you've got to give some credence and, as I say, kudos to Aldous Huxley to an extent, because he did say what was coming, and he did say that you could be made to love your servitude, for instance, and we're here, we're pretty well here. You've got all the internet things on the go. They started off years ago with free this and free that, and I mentioned at the time back in the 90s that eventually they would rain on all the freebies. Once you're on it and you're addicted to it and it's habitual, it's a daily thing for you, then you wouldn't give it up when you realised it was all a con and it was there to spy on you and run your life, and you better, and eventually you have to check in every day to different groups or else come to your door to see what's wrong with you and why aren't you checking in. Really, it's quite something. But most folk love it. They love the system. They couldn't imagine life without it. Why do you think almost every movie you see that's got any kind of teenagers or young people in it, even in their early 20s, They've got some computers, cell phones, in almost every other shop. Why do you think that's like that? It's to make them think that isn't how you're supposed to behave. Monkey see, monkey do. I've seen it my whole life long. I've seen things promoted through movies and adopted by the culture very quickly. And again, by the culture industry, music and everything else too. Fashion, you name it. Terminology. Until you've got all the young, the little children cussing and swearing. All the stuff that you hear from television and movies. There's been a war against society. Complete war. To break down the culture of the peoples. Their basic culture that took centuries to develop. They kept them intact. It helped them at least to help each other out in bad times. That's what Christianity was supposed to be about. Again, some cohesiveness and meaning to life. And a very cruel system. We forget very quickly how it's been in feudal systems, which really existed up into the early 20th century. They're still pretty well feudal. Whether you like it to not to believe it or even admit it or not, it's a fact. And you see remnants of the feudal system today. In fact, I think it's still here in a sense. Very much so. And you don't have to be hereditary blue bloods to be in the feudal system to run it. You have the technocrats now and the scientists running it on behalf of the incredibly wealthy, rich people who made their money in money. That's where they get their money from. Even the think tanks that the Council on Foreign Relations have, which is just a part of the Royal Institute for International Affairs. And they said that's their job, is to advise governments across the world. Well, why are they advising governments across the world when the public are supposed to be voting for things? They probably don't get a chance to vote for anything that matters to them. They don't. But we go along with this farce. So the system we live in is a brutal system. Very brutal. So brutal, in fact, the Psychiatric Association at the end of World War II, even during World War II, said, and as well as one of their goals, mind you, even under Freud, was to take over the brainwashing of every child as they grew up to remake society in their own image, basically, and how we should behave. You would understand that. And, of course, even the British Psychiatric Association said after World War II, with the top psychiatrist saying that they wanted the right to even psychiatrically evaluate everyone who would be passed fit or failed. But they would get the right to pass or fail them, of politicians and civil servants and anybody working for government positions. Everybody wants the power, don't they? Everybody. The thing is, the general public don't get any of it because they really do think it's just too easy to fool them, isn't it? Well, the cliches that politicians come out with, the well-worn, well-trodden cliches over and over again, gets them in. Like Bill Clinton, I feel your pain. And as for they even made a big deal about that in the paper. Oh, well, he at least acknowledges that there's pain out there that you're all suffering. Really? Yeah, that's quite something, isn't it? And the US, of course, has been used as a battering ram that took over from Britain. And Britain used its peasant class for the battering ram for their part in a world empire the skeletal system for the world order to come that they want across the whole planet. The US took over because Britain's already bankrupt with all the different wars, since the public have to pay for all the debts for having massive armies and for the cost of the war industries and the shipping and the armaments and so on, and laying out railroads across the planet so the big boys who really own Britain could have all the goodies shipped to them, all the resources out of other countries. The peasant class got nothing except the bill. Nothing changes. Now it's the Americans' turn. They've got the bill and their standard of living is dropping. But those who own America are high in the hog with incredible incomes today. Incredible incomes. A well-worn system, isn't it? Well tried. But yeah, I can remember, for instance, in the UK, knowing about the incredible poverty and the terrible times folk had, even in Ireland, where mass migrations from Ireland came over for people trying to escape what they called the famine. But the famine wasn't all to do with what we were told in the history books. It was worse than that. Their food was getting taken away from them, and their beef industry too, and exported across the world, but mainly to the British war industry for the troops abroad, things like that. Terrible it was, absolutely terrible. And the folk who survived that, I mean, you have an imprinted memory the folk had, and would pass on to their own children. Absolute terror and fear and anger if they couldn't get their children working or get a job for children. They would go into a fury, a rage, because it was life or death to them. And I'm talking about after they migrated into Scotland, these people, some of them. That's how they were. Utter fear and horror of dying, as many did at the sides of roads, you know. Eating grass and so on, as I say. That was when the British Empire was at its peak, for those who don't quite get it. Yeah. Horror systems. That's the truth of the past. Absolute horror. And you take a Britain that came through that, the incredible crashes and bankruptcies and so on, and as a few people like never before had got so much money accumulated from the empire, while the rest of the people just kept paying and paying and paying and paying, in an age where they had malnutrition quite commonly across good parts of Britain, and then into a World War I with food rationing and all kinds of rationing, and from that straight into the Great Depression. They never got out of a depression from World War I, in actual fact. And all the way into depression, they didn't ease up and straight into World War II. With this massive, incredible rationing, you'd look up and see what they're allowed to have per person per day. You couldn't do it today. You couldn't do it. Most of it would give up and just die. And that went on till 1953, I think, or 54. And then after that, it wasn't like turned on again, where folk couldn't afford it. Britain was still skint, broke, from World War I. And here's World War II past. And then malnutrition and rickets, the population, and so on. Really terrible. That's the truth of what happened. An abusive system. But World War I, as I say, crashed what was left of the UK, Britain. Because it was always every loan for their empire, basically was put on the backs of the people to pay off, and they got nothing out of this empire except the debt. It's really something, and it doesn't change. As I say, it doesn't change. We're living in a very, how can you put it? It's a diabolical system, to be honest with you. And we're sitting waiting for the next financial crash, because in 2008, the top con men of economists told us it'll take about 10 years or so to really notice the increase in prices and so on. And they called it inflation, because all of the bailouts. And the bailouts, by the way, by the World Bank and the IMF and so on, are guaranteed to be paid off by the peasantry. That's what the government must sign you on to, with high interest rates, very high interest rates, on top of all the pre-existing debt of governments and previous governments, going way back. And therefore, that's why your dollar is worth a fraction of what it was worth last, of 10 years ago, and so on. That's why it's a racket, a con game. But they said they would catch up in 10 years' time. We're seeing it now, and you're ready for the next collapse. But the boys at the top never lose anything. They're still buying their islands and buying that across the planet and so on. Not bad, eh? Not bad at all. As your own governments are training you all to go into austerity. Well, I keep saying, how do you think they're going to get you into austerity? Well, are you managing to pay off your regular bills and expenses per week? Are you? Are you really? Have you noticed that it's getting harder and harder? Have you noticed it's getting for a lot of folk, they can't eat meat anymore if they want to? It's just too expensive. Think it's all by chance? You know, the government has agencies. They're working with agencies, the nudge units, to try to put you off eating meat, especially beef. Not for themselves, of course, but for you. They never go without themselves, even during wartime for rationing. But you do. And you'd be trained to believe you're doing the right thing, you see, to save the world and the planet and all the rest of it. And you can sit back and watch the return of all these malnutritional diseases. Everything is a racket and a con game. Again, I could go into this. I didn't intend to even go here tonight, actually. But I was just thinking about how ridiculous the cost of basic things now in Canada happens to be. As Canada is dishing out like billions across the world to teach supposedly women in third world countries to give them educations. Billions, we're giving it billions every year now as we go down the tubes back home. Because you have to go into a world system, you see, where the whole world's getting kind of flattened, and even the ones who will be in charge of other countries across the planet, some of them are actually the ones who are getting the education paid for by Canada to keep their countries under their thumbs. Quite interesting how it works, eh? They pick the leaders and there it goes. Therefore, every generation of children are the victims by the governmental system, the ones who are there to help you, all the agencies. And there's lots of prostitutes in the agencies under social work who are quite happy to take big paychecks, and teachers in school, of course, to brainwash children to obey. Until they're scared even to argue with things that they don't like. They're scared to argue. Because they're bad if you argue. You're bad if you have a different point of view. Bad, you see. You also have I mentioned before too, this organization in Scotland. And they say Scotland is in the midst of a cultural revolution. More and more of us are coming to understand the impact of childhood stress on adult health and happiness. Wow. As I said, Britain had nothing but war after war for about 200 years for an empire, which a handful owned. A handful of people owned the empire. Still do, actually. And the public had to pay for all. In blood, guts, sweat, and tears, and financial. And when it's financial, it means there's money going out of you for taxes instead of going into your stomach as food. That's the reality of it. So here they go again, eh? So, yeah, it's just that people are just, you know, there's this mental stress on children in Scotland. Scotland was deculturalized heavily. Since even before Bonnie Prince Charlie, is like to call the guy who came over for his revolution in 1745. It was already massively getting deculturalised, including the southern Scotland too. It wasn't just the highland areas. And when you do that in every culture, and Darwin knew it too, the people tend to turn on themselves and become nihilistic to themselves and self-destructive. That's what happens, folks. Now, remember, across the board, the whole of Europe, every country's been deculturalized now. In preparation for this new system, a new world peasantry of equal peasants ruled by the same con men that brought it all about. So they're making Scotland the world's first ACE-aware nation. ACE, also, they pay big bucks for these marketing companies to come up with this rubbish. You see? So we're going to have ACE education and so on. And there'll be psychiatrists and psychologists and different workers involved in creating it all. I'll put a couple of links up for you to. I've done it before, the same organization with ACE, that is. And of course, GIRFEG as well, getting it right for every child. We're with the state authorised agent for every child born in Scotland. You wonder why there's problems with mental health. You've annihilated the culture. You've got the people in a deculturalised society getting fed nothing but depressive stuff from the BBC forever. Where every play that they put on there is dysfunctional families and women arguing with guys and guys arguing with women and children arguing with everybody. That's all they showed for years and years and years. There was everything that would put folk off getting married was pushed out there, big time. And that was not a mistake. It's a war on society. You might say on civilization. Mm-hmm. So that's GIRFEC as well. And, you know, you take, I've said before how folk think they're normal because they bounce their opinions on with their peer group, you see. And if folks say, yeah, I think the same thing, you know. So it doesn't matter if they've been indoctrinated to see things in a particular fashion that doesn't jive. Somewhere in the back of their mind when they have real experiences, that doesn't jive with my indoctrination here. Could my indoctrination be kind of wrong? And they'll ask their peer group what they think about it. And since they all want to belong to the same peer group, they all want to have the same opinion, especially the more educated they are, the more so that was so. They've done all the studies on this. So they're the easiest ones to control are the well-educated people, actually. But here's how you think you're well, you see. You bounce your ideas. And this is from Aldous Huxley. He says, the real hopeless victims of mental illness are to be found amongst those who appear to be most normal. That's a fact, folks. Listen to the statements you get from people who think they're normal and might be very successful, in fact, or at the very least average. He says, many of them are normal because they're so well adjusted to our mode of existence. Because their human voice has been silenced so early in their lives, they do not even struggle or suffer or develop symptoms as the neurotic does. They're normal not in what they may be called the absolute sense of the word. They're normal only in relation to profoundly abnormal society. Do you understand what he's saying here? Do you understand that? In other words, if you're living in an abnormal society, where they keep telling you, you've never had it so good, really. They've replaced all the spiritual values of all cultures across the planet, or they're trying to. They've done it very well with some, but the rest are still, some of it still go down yet. But with science to replace all, and they've done study after study trying to find out if people are truly happy with all technological stuff. Is that really a good substitute for what used to be relationships within groups that you met, physically met, and friends that you physically met, and mates that you would have for life? Do we have that now? No, we don't. But we're told that we're to be happy, 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 because the culture industry will give you replacements for all of that through all kinds of technological entertainment, for instance. There you go. They're even promising to give you virtual realities to make you think you're in real things. But they'll decide the relationships. They'll decide what happens in these relationships. They'll decide what you believe in those relationships. That's the slavery, folks, of the most diabolical kind. That's what it is. But some folk think it's wonderful already. They really do. Because all they've known, a lot of youngsters think this, in fact, in their 20s now, that's all they've ever known. They think it's just quite all normal. They think it's normal to give it all your data every day when they're asked to, and even when they're not asked to. Even though folk fought for centuries to get freedom for privacy. Pretty something, eh? And this is a time as they bring you into austerity, into a stage where they will have a lot of people unemployed permanently. Even Maggie Thatcher talked about it. She said that a generation is growing up who will never see work in their lifetime. Get used to it. That's what she said on a national speech she gave out. Get used to it. And so they open up all the pubs all day long instead of for a few hours in the afternoon and then the rest at night. So she opened up all day to keep them off the streets so they could spend their welfare money getting drunk and just passing out and so on. And you think you're free? You're getting managed like little, well, what can I say? Little children, in a sense. But now it's the time for drugging them all and giving them the choice. Well, see, you're really bad. Nobody's forcing you to take drugs. No one's forcing you, really. If you get enough stress, you'll turn to anything. You get a bit of relief. And they know this too. But now's the time for Soma. And Aldous Huxley also said there will be in the next generation or so a pharmacological method of making people love their servitude and producing dictatorship without tears, so to speak. Producing a kind of painless concentration camp for entire societies, so that people will in fact have their liberties taken away from them, but will rather enjoy it. Well, don't you think you're here, folks? A dictatorship without tears. And the whole idea of the system we're in right now is to train you all to get past this con that they've used for years, and it's a con because they don't need it much longer, into the new system where you just accept you're being ruled by your betters, professional people, you see. And you'll be quite happy with that because you can go and play all day with your soma and your virtual realities. Dictatorship without tears. So don't think that this is new. This is a very old plan, very old plan. And Aldous Huxley was he was working with the groups to help to create the cultures, the step-by-step changes in the cultures right to the present day. He worked with all the biggies. He knew it was coming. I'm telling you. It's really something. He also said the victim of mind manipulation does not know that he is a victim. To him, the walls of his prison are invisible, and he believes himself to be free. And of course, you find that other players at the time that knew each other, like Bertrand Russell, they talked about the same things, and because he was a big player of Russell in creating that culture and the changes for the culture. Right down to experimental schools that he was given way before anybody heard of the experimental schools. And he knew what they would bring. He said we can really get the children young enough, we can make them believe anything. He thought it was a good thing they could make them believe anything. He even made them believe that snow was black if they wanted to. So he said they could do it. And he thought it was wonderful that they had the techniques to do it all. Mind manipulation. So it's we're in an awful, awful time of mass manipulation, and it's all going according to plan. Never think that that you're hearing of all kinds of organizations on a world scale, they're all separate. No, they're only different branches, specialized branches of the same big octopus, you might say. They've got a central head, and they all have their special branches. And even the Council on Foreign Relations has specialized branches, their foreign affairs departments, made up of people who often have high investments in the wars across the world, especially in certain places and so on, very, very openly. And they have other ones to do with what the children should be taught in the next generation, and who are born even in this generation, what they should be taught and where to go from there. Oh, I mean, there's nothing you can't do if you get them young enough. And if you put up enough propaganda, using marketing and so on, and education, and again, entertainment, they've said themselves that you can definitely influence people for change. I can remember when I was small, the marketing companies with psychological departments of Oxford and different places talking about that they would use women, mainly women, for change, because women could be taught they were more open to trying change than men were. Men were far more conservative. I'm talking about social change, not just fashion and so, but that too. social change, and it's been awfully successful. But again, they knew this from previous experiments down through the ages, and Hitler knew it too. Hitler knew that to bypass the conservative German male, to make the government the head that people would follow, you go for the women first, it's the fastest way. Promise them safety and security and money for their families, and they will definitely follow. They'll make a hero of whoever the leader is. And he said that this is aimed to the women over the heads of the husbands, and the women will come to us, the children will follow the mother, and therefore must follow the man. That's what Hitler said. And it's true, but he didn't invent that. The Soviets had already tried that too, initially, in their early phases as well. It's quite fascinating, because we have weaknesses. We all have weaknesses, and we have traits. We're born with certain traits and drives and so on, and that these can all be exploited by those who understand them. And we are an open book in this day and age, like never before, for complete exploitation. But again, it's a painless concentration camp at the moment for most folk. So I'll put this ongoing push for everyone being tested for mental health, as they want to say, meaning, are you indoctrinated enough, or are you too independent? The UN keeps saying that the greatest enemy is individualism. That must be annihilated. And of course, that's what's also behind the real push for mental testing, to eliminate individualism and individual thinkers. Not kidding you, that's really what's behind it. World War II left toxic legacy of ill health and depression. Well, no kidding. I wonder why, as they ravaged society, lots of the men never came back from the darn wars, and the families had an awful time trying to even get food during it and after it and even before it. Mm-hmm. That's the truth of it. So I'll put these ones up. Mental health care for children and adolescents worldwide, a review, etc. These are only a few of them. But that's where it's all going, you see. That's where it's all going. Meanwhile, society is just getting ravaged. It's just, the culture is getting destroyed. And remember the ones with Tony Blair when his second in command came out? I read the articles years ago, and not so long ago too, on the air, when it was on the radio. And Tony Blair had demanded that they bring masses of migrants in then. This is then. In order to destroy, he said, to destroy the culture of Britain. He said that. That was in the newspapers. And I'll make put that link up again if I can find it. But I was quite open about it. That's quite something, isn't it? That these characters that you think are simply individuals. And socially, I mean, when you see who Blair is, a good psychopath picked up early and trained as a youngster to be Prime Minister one day, who would take Britain off to wars had no right to be in the first place. And also using those wars for mass migrations to destroy the culture. Quite so. And they're using the same thing now in America, for America and elsewhere. It's quite something, isn't it? Quite something. And then you get to articles like London needs more police officers on the streets to tackle the bloody knife crime epidemic gripping the capital. Sajid Javid admits, it says here, the Home Secretary. So the goats, what can you do, eh? It's not safe to be there now. And not finished with it yet. Not just Britain, but elsewhere too. All blowback from planned wars, eh? Which they knew, and they knew they'd use the blowback to do exactly what they're doing. Quite something. And in Australia is the same thing. They've got people stabbing folk through radicalization for terrorism. And it's true enough, they always try to say, well, they've got mental health problems, but it's a standard excuse that they're told to give out. There's organizations that put them out immediately. Well, there's mental health. No, these are planned kill deaths, murders, that's planned murders in countries. As they try to terrorize the public and get them terrified. Because people actually go towards the abuser when they're terrified, and the abuser is your own governments that are doing it in the first place. I'll put these ones up for Australia too. And again, it's interesting, even with Donald Trump in the US, who he certainly did give the massive tax breaks to the big corporations, the very big corporations, of course. He also has put massive pressure on Iran, that for some reason, as we know, America, we shouldn't even be involved in. But they want to starve them out, just like they did with Iraq, which will cause more. And it's already causing mass migration out of Iran, too, for over the years, which is another way of warfare. You can terrify the public to simply move. You can starve them to death. You can do all kinds of rotten things without necessarily bombing them. And with the threat of bombing down the road or the threat of more starvation, folk just keep getting out. And therefore, the enemies of that country have the place to themselves, in a sense. So there's many ways to get folk to do what you want them to do if you've got the power behind you. It's disgusting, isn't it, really? Disgusting. So everybody suffers. All the ordinary folk suffer across the planet. We all know that Bayer acquired Monsanto. They're the sole shareholder of Monsanto now. CRISPR. Let's talk about CRISPR. Geneticists have used a CRISPR gene editing to create crops that grow more food. This is their big PR piece here. All these things are really PR pieces. And we're editing our way through global food shortage. There isn't a global food shortage, folks, any more than these companies are there to feed the world. They're corporations that have taken over the agribusinesses. And with the backing of government that they heavily contribute to and lobby, they're a monopoly. And the stuff they make us eat is not there to help us. Not these chemicals, for sure. They know what's doing to us, too. But again, most folk don't care because we are in this painless concentration camp for most folk. Mm-hmm. You've never had so much cheap, and sometimes even free, entertainment and brainwashing at the same time. And we're going down the tubes now to, well, it isn't just brain chimming. You don't necessarily have to chip folks' brains, but with brain scanning hats, China signals it has no interest in workers' privacy, it says. It's an article here, April 30th, 2018, it came out. Emerging technology. Like, it's a good thing. That's how it's put across. They'll even tell you, I suppose, in their PR pieces, that, well, if you do a monotonous task at some conveyor belt and isn't automated yet with robots, then your day could fly in because they could give you a dreamlike state. You're doing something else in your head rather than just sort things on a conveyor belt. Isn't that humane? Hmm? Here's another one, too: high-precision automated reconstruction of neurons with flood-filling networks, it says here. I'll put these ones up. And it says China is mining data directly from workers' brains on an industrial scale, this one says. Government-backed surveillance projects deploying brain-reading technology to detect changes in emotional states. We're going to turn into cyborgs, you see, aren't we? And then Britain's biggest employer organisation and main trade union body have sounded alarm over the prospect of British companies implanting staff with microchips to improve security. It's to improve security, you see. So UK firm Biotech, TAQ, which offers implants to businesses and individuals, has already 150 implants in the UK. They're putting them between the thumb and the forefinger under the flesh. And another company, Biohacks of Sweden, also provides human chip implants the size of grains of rice. It told the Sunday Telegraph that it is in discussions with several British legal and financial firms about fitting their employees with microchips. See, if you want a job, well, you know what? They microchip you. It's a great thing, isn't it? They can financially blackmail you. Well, you can either starve to death or you can work for us with a chip. You're free, aren't you? You were free, yeah. Map of a billion brain links reveals clues about how we think. This is freedom? Really? And the supercomputer that could map the human brain. Wow. Isn't that amazing, eh? Nanobots made of DNA can now carry and sort molecular cargo. The bots have feet, an arm, and even a brain telling them what to do, eh? Robots made of DNA. Now they're in the Internet of Things. It's quite, you know, they had movies out about that a few years back. It's pretty well coming here now, eh? Magnetoelectric nanoparticles, they say. But there you go. So they're using the, as I say, the gene editing to create crops that grow more food, they claim. Well, the gene editing is also the same way of turning on, switching off switches in your brain as well, by the way, with humans, for those who haven't quite understood that yet. This is what we're living in today. Huh? Quite some. Quite some. Yeah. Quite some. But you're in a painless concentration camp, eh? Lots of sex. Lots of all the things that just keep you entertained. And even your soma drug. Your masters certainly are perfecting this hell on earth, eh? Well, that's it for the night. I kind of ran through this whole lot here. I wasn't sure if I'd talk about it or not, because I try not to prepare too much, because I think our thoughts should be free to roam spontaneously. I think lots of folk are losing that ability, to be honest with you, with the system we're in, this painless concentration camp. It's about to become a little bit more painful, I would think, in the short run at least. Science is our hell. It really is. There's nothing humane in science. There's nothing moral in science either. It doesn't have pros and cons. It is what it is. It's like the word profit, for instance. What is a profit? You can profit of all kinds of things. You can profit if you're even paid to kill people. That's a profit. Doesn't care if it's plus or negatives or neutral, it's what it is. But all these things are inhumane. Well, I hope it warms up a little bit for us. Remember, buy the books and discs, or you can donate to me at cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And hopefully we can tick along and stay out of all the usual nonsense of politics, because it's all a joke, folks. From myself, Alan Watt, from Ontario, Canada, it's good night. And may your God or your gods go with you.